Hey, I'm Colby.
And I'm Kate.
And this is the Kate and Colby Show.
We call this part of the show Spiritual Nuggets. The goal is to offer a bite-sized word of encouragement and inspiration to nourish your soul.
So I have a question for you. When was the last time that a police officer basically told you you were driving around a stolen car? Because for me, it was about a month ago. I get a knock on the door and a police officer says, "Is that your van out front?" And this is our, keep in mind, this is our church van. And if you've ever seen our church van, it's this massive Ford F-250 with this custom spray paint graffiti job that says Love Wins on one side and Sojourn Grace Collective on the other side. I'm like, "Yeah, that's my van. Why?" And he said, "Well, your tags are expired." I'm like, "Ah, dang it. Well, I haven't received them yet from the DMV, but I promise it's my car. It's up to date." He takes me out to his car and he shows me in his computer system that this van was still registered to not the guy I bought it from, people. Not the guy I bought it from. The guy that I bought it from, the guy that he bought it from, is for, like, registered back in early 2016 was the last time this van was registered. And the cop looks at me like, is this really your van? I'm like, "No, I swear it's really my van." So what had happened was back on January 20th, 2017. Yes, I remember the day that I bought the van because it was the day that President Trump was inaugurated. I find this van off Craigslist and I buy it from this used car dealer about an hour away from me. And the guy kind of creeped me out, to be honest with you. I didn't really enjoy my experience with him, but I wanted the van. He was kind of racist. When he found out that I was a Christian pastor, he thought that, like, he wanted to bond with me over that. But he said some things that were really, you know, from my perspective, as far from Christian as you can get, but he thought he was showing his true Christian card. And it was a horrible experience. I'm like, "Get me out of here, please." So I buy the van and he fills out all the paperwork by hand because his computer wasn't working. And then fast forward to the cop knocking on my door and I'm thinking, what is going on? 6 months ago, I bought this van from this guy. Why is it not in my name? Why do I not have tags from the DMV? And so I contacted the guy. It turns out he doesn't know what happened. He doesn't know where the paperwork went. The best he can say is, "I was in the hospital for, like, a heart attack, and I think I just lost the paperwork." And I'm like, "I'm really sorry about the heart attack, but you got to take care of the van." And at that point, the van had completely broken down. So it was parked out front, and I couldn't even move it because it didn't start. I tell this to the guy, and you know what? The taste that was left in my mouth when I bought the van from him 6 months ago, it began to turn, because this guy, when he heard that he failed to register the car for me, when he heard it wasn't working, he went about to really try and set it right. He paid to have a tow truck bring it all the way up to his mechanic, like an hour away. He paid his mechanic to work on it. When my mechanic said it'd be like a $3,000 transmission job, he paid to get the title regenerated and cover all the DMV fees. And when I went to pick up the van a week after that, and I was driving up there thinking, you know what? I did not like this guy 6 months ago. I never wanted to see him again. And I hated that I had to deal with him again to get this all worked out over his mistakes. But he really went above and beyond to get this thing right. And so when I picked the van up from him and he gave me the keys, I shook his hand and I let's say his name was Luke. I said, "Luke, the measure of a man is not whether or not he makes mistakes. It's what he does after he makes the mistake. And so to that extent, Luke, you measure well. I want to thank you for making this right." And so that's what I want to share with you on today's spiritual nugget is, look, it's not about avoiding making mistakes. Like, that is going to happen. You're going to make mistakes. That is not the measure of your character. That is not the measure of the type of person you are, whether or not you make mistakes. Like, big deal. We make mistakes. The thing that matters most is, what do you do next? What do you do next? Do you own that you made a mistake? Or do you try and get defensive and escape it? Do you acknowledge to someone that you hurt, that you hurt them? Do you go about trying to set right the wrong that you might have made, whether you meant to or not? Do you go about trying to set that right? Because I truly think that the measure of a person is not if they make mistakes or not. That's just, that's going to happen. But I think what matters most is whatever you do next once you realize the mistake has been made.
We call this part of the show Chaotic Peace. This is where we explore some of the more chaotic parts of life, from marriage to parenting to relationships, community, church, religion, and we share some ideas of how you can find more peace.
So we thought we'd do something kind of different for the next several episodes of our show for this segment, The Chaotic Peace. We thought we would take one topic and spread it out over at least four episodes. And so the topic for today and the next few weeks is going to be the journey of faith. And Kate and I want to talk about our specific faith journeys. We've alluded to parts of it in previous episodes, but we really want to break it down for you. We want to talk about things like, what was it that pushed us away from conservative Christianity, or a more conservative expression of Christianity? What are the things that compels us or draws us towards a more progressive view of the Christian faith? We'll talk about things like, what was that experience like when we left our tribe? How did that impact our family, our friends, our church? How did it impact our own inner selves? We'll talk about what are some of the ways that our lives are different now as we practice progressive Christianity. What are some of the fruits that come? So that's the idea, right, Kate? You liked the idea, obviously, because we're doing it. Oh, it was your idea. You just whispered to me. Yeah, but that's also how our marriage works. So it's pretty common for Kate to have an idea and then Colby to say it.
You liked the idea, right, Kate?
As though it was a brand new idea.
It was mine, so yeah. Yep.
So you still like it. Great. Okay. Thank you, producer, for cleaning that up for me in post. Okay. So today in our faith journey, part one, segment A, where I thought we could start was to share a bit of the religious context in which each one of us grew up. What was that like? Where did we come from?
Are you asking me that now?
Asking you that now.
Okay. Yeah, we did allude to it in a couple of episodes talking about the Bible, I think. But yeah, I grew up in church, the kind of church experience where you're there at least twice a week, right? Sunday mornings and like, I don't know, Wednesday evening.
Wednesday's traditional, whatever, that's correct. Right? And bet for you Sunday night as well.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Because like, you were in the more Sunday school Pentecostal tradition. Yes. So you would church all day on Sundays.
Yes. Yeah, totally. And I absolutely loved it. For me, growing up in the church was a beautiful, beautiful experience. And really, when I look back, I think I really needed it. I don't know where I would be today if I didn't grow up like that. I mean, it's always funny, like the Butterfly Effect movie, to think about if one piece of your life was different. So I don't really know what I mean when I say that. But I just know that at school, I didn't feel safe or seen. And I struggled and was... I was just really miserable at school growing up. That was a miserable experience for me. But then at church, I was like free and comfortable, safe, alive, like just really alive there. I loved going to church. I absolutely loved it. I would be sad to miss it. I sometimes hear people talk about, you know, how kids, like it's like the idea people have in their head of if kids going to church is like they dread it. And I just have never resonated with that experience because loved going to church.
And what was the denomination or affiliation that you grew up in?
I grew up in Newburgh, Oregon, Open Bible Church. I don't know if that's part of a denomination, Open Bible. Actually, I'm not sure. But it was your more Pentecostal, I don't know a better word than that to describe it, lively. What's the word?
Charismatic.
There you go. Okay. And yeah, I loved everything about being with my family, doing something with them. Like I always wished that when I went to school, I could take my mom, my dad, and my brothers with me to class, you know? So I loved going as a family and I loved our friends group there, we were always the people who, you know, got there early and did the coffee social before and then stayed way after. And the kids, you know, we would run around. I'm still best friends with the people that I was best friends with growing up at that church.
Wow.
To this day, they're everything to me. And I think of going to church and I think of that. I think of the comfort and beauty of having people who I knew would be there for me no matter what. And really belonging is what I think of when I think of my childhood experience. I didn't feel that at school at all. And then at church, I really just felt like I belonged and I was part of the family. And I just loved everything about it. And my parents were always super involved. And I think I really liked that. Like, I think about it now being a leader at a church. I think I always just really had a taste. Like, I loved watching my parents teach Sunday school, or my dad would preach sometimes, and my mom would lead groups. And I loved, there was something about that I really loved that I can't even really put my finger on, but I That's loved cool. being a part of a family that was in more of a leadership role or whatever. So I just loved growing up in a faith community. And you know, I was talking about loving the experience of going to church. I also just loved having a faith, like having, growing up with language to use and images to use to have a faith experience in my own heart and life. Like, I loved that. I loved falling asleep at night praying and just having, like, I'm super grateful that I grew up that way. Of, you know, whatever's changed now, I still love that I grew up having, like, a God to name. That's like so cool. A thing to belong to and a faith to express. Like, I just have really fond memories of that and love that.
That's so cool. Where I come from. What about, like, theologically? What was the context for?
Theologically, you know, it was those who believe in Jesus Christ as their Lord and Savior and confess Him as that, and confess that they are sinners, will, when they die, go to heaven. You know, there's a lot of, like, making sure you know where you're going when you die. Like, if you were to die tomorrow in a car crash, make sure you know where you would go. And to know that, you have to, believe in your heart and confess that you're a sinner and that Jesus saved you on the cross, died on the cross. So that was like the main thing, right? Theologically, that's it. That's what matters. Yeah. And then, you know, the peripheral stuff that ended up feeling bigger to me, things like, men are the head of the household, and women are to submit. And, I don't know that that's theology, but anyway, that's the type of tradition I grew up in.
Yeah.
So God and three persons.
So it fit kind of the American traditional conservative
evangelical.
World. Like that was definitely the context, but I loved even watching you. I mean, your face lights up when you talk about
not funny.
That time in your life. Like, you know, as we'll talk about the journey, we're clearly progressive Christians now.
Yeah.
So very different than we grew up.
Yeah, people have heard me in previous podcasts make really cynical remarks, or even like, I've listened back to one of ours where we were talking about the Bible, and I was like making puke noises and kind of getting really riled up.
Yeah.
And I thought, gosh, that girl sounds so cynical. And what's funny is, I do light up. But yeah, it's not the whole picture. Yeah. Like, I loved the faith I was given and still do.
So. Yeah, that's so.
Yeah, that's part of it as well.
So precious. That's the word that comes to mind. Like, it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, that really is.
Yep. What about you?
You know, I think had I not heard you describe it in that way, I might have more focused on some of the negatives, but I hear you share those stories. I'm like, yeah, no, wait, I liked that too.
Yeah.
I also liked going to church,
you did.
as a family. I don't.
Do you remember going to church as a,
you know what, as soon as you said family? That, I'm like, I don't really remember. Cause you know, my, for the listeners, my parents separated when I was like 8. So I don't have really many memories prior to that. I remember, the basement of our church, because that's where we would go after church for the like punch and cookies. I remember that. That was fantastic.
Wait, punch and cookies, were you Baptist?
That's correct. Thank you. You nailed it. So I'm a recovering Baptist. And I remember Christmas and Easter cantatas. Both my parents were active in the choir.
What are those?
A cantata? Is that new for you?
Yes.
Oh, baby Jesus. It is the thing that makes the world go round.
Is it now?
It's basically just a
my
word that means
still.
Like, it's a musical. It's a play. It's a So
that's why I don't know anything about it. I don't know that world.
Yeah. So for me, like,
but that's it. It's just a musical or play. Or is there?
That's right.
There's something special about it.
Yeah. Well, that is special. Music.
No, I know, but why? Okay.
We'll why is it called a cantata? Yeah. I do not actually know. Okay. So
anyway, you remember those?
I remember those. They were big deals. They would they would take weeks of rehearsal, and so me and my brothers would be at the church, or sometimes our church would rent out the local community college theater, and we would play around like at LBCC. You remember that?
Yeah. Why were you playing around there? Because your parents were
involved? Yeah, because they were doing rehearsals. They were doing in the choir.
So you, like me, had parents who were like really involved in like doing...
Yeah, my dad sang in this four-part men's a cappella group with, Matt Strausser and Dave Oswald and a guy that I think got subbed in sometimes, so I don't remember his name. But yeah, they would sing. And I bet if I stopped for a minute, I could even sing one of their songs, but I won't. So there were some really cherished memories. My grandma and grandpa went to our early church that we grew up in. It was a Baptist world. So theology, very similar to yours insofar as it relates to like believing in Jesus, particular prayer, save you from sin and heaven and not hell.
Yeah.
But Baptist and sort of the charismatic, they would be pretty different on some other things.
Yeah.
And I didn't always buy into a lot of the Baptist theology, as we'll get to, I think, in next week's episode. Or maybe later in this one. I'm not sure. So that was my context. Family, same, just like you, church all the time. Religiously went to church, involved. Fond memories insofar as it meant being together as a family and hanging out. And
what about your... Like I mentioned, like the fond memories of going to church, but then I even was like, oh yeah. And like the personal faith. Do you remember like having a personal faith when you were a kid?
I remember being in the top bunk of our bunk bed and it was right before bed. And I called to one of my parents, but that's what I don't remember. If it was that I called to my mom or I called to my dad. Whichever one I called to, the other one was gone. I think I called to my dad because my mom was gone at women's camp. But that sounds right. The other parent was gone at like a camp. And so I think I called to my dad and I told him, you know, I gave him the line of, Daddy, I'm ready to pray to ask Jesus to come into my heart. And so my dad led me through the prayer of... praying to, you know, I don't know what sins a five-year-old would have to confess at that point. But that was how it went. So confess sins and invite Jesus to come into my heart. And I remember then when we went as a family to pick up my mom from camp, or maybe it was a men's camp. I don't remember.
Whatever parent
went to pick up. I remember then with great enthusiasm on the drive home telling them, you know, that I became a Christian or accepted Jesus into my heart. That's probably how I phrased it. And that was really, there's a tenderness to that. That, you know, I look back, you know, we look now at our kids and, well, we'll get into that. But, you know, the messages, the things that it takes for a young child to think about.
Yeah.
In order to get to a place where they think they need to accept Jesus into their heart.
Yeah.
Like that's really damaging and unhealthy.
Yeah. We don't tell our kids those things. Yeah.
There's some real fondness there.
Yeah. It can't all be bad, obviously, because we have a lot of joy thinking about it.
Sunday school and flannel graphs.
Yeah.
Love a good flannel graph.
Did you just say I love a good flannel graph?
I do love a good flannel graph. I mean, those things will just stay up there. It's magical. And there's always a boy with loaves of fishes. And
I love that story. But anyway, what else do you want to talk about for this first part?
Okay, so that gives a little bit of context. We were both raised conservative theology, but church going was a precious part as well.
Yeah.
But there came a point for each of us.
Yeah.
Where the clothes of conservative Christianity started to not fit very well. The jeans got a little tight. The sleeves on the shirt got a little short. The zipper broke. It just, we started.
You're always so good at metaphors and analogies.
I appreciate you saying so good. I feel I'm just average at them. I say them. I come up with them. I'm good at coming up with them. They may not always be that great. Yeah, but there's a point where I think we recognize that the parts of this didn't really fit for us.
Yeah.
So I think that would be then the second part to this first segment is
what
were some of the things that, yeah, pushed us away from a conservative expression of the Christian faith.
Yeah. Are you asking me that first?
Well, I just got done talking for a bunch. So we can like go back and forth. If you want to say something, I'll say something.
Cool. Yeah. Oh man. So I think I was that like typical raised in church kid who kind of, went back and forth in whether it was the thing for me a little bit until, like around the teenage years, you know, mm-hmm. like that typical teenager that's like, whatever, this is so not cool. This doesn't fit me. Then back to, you know, oh, but it's like those fond memories draw you in or whatever. Yeah. And I would kind of go back and forth throughout my teenage years. And then when my mom passed away, she was sick through all of my teenage experience. And when she finally died, I think it sparked in me this like, I don't know, kind of dig my heels back in. Like I needed, I think my ground was shook so much that I needed that grounding. And so I really dug back into the faith that I was given as a kid. And I say that because that's what ended up pushing me away from it, actually, is that I really dug in and got super serious about this is what I believe. And when you get super serious about believing that everybody's going to hell and everybody's a sinner, it'll rock you. If you take it seriously.
If you take that seriously, that should mess you up.
That should mess you up. Like if you believe that your loved ones who haven't done this specific prayer that we alluded to, like if you have people in your life who aren't saying, I'm a sinner, I need to believe that Jesus died on the cross to save me from my sins so that I can go to heaven. If you have people in your life who don't do that and you love those people, like I couldn't sleep at night. I couldn't sleep at night because I was taking it seriously for the first time in my life. This was like our early 20s. And really when we first moved to Arizona, I think we had grown up in Oregon all our lives. That's where all of our family was. And when we moved, I think I had this like, there's a little bit of separation there between us and our family. It freed me up a little bit. So I started really contacting my grandmother a lot more because she, from my perspective back then, I'll say, participated in and her own faith was different than that of what I was given as a kid. And so in my framework that I was given, I was supposed to believe that my grandmother, my favorite person on the planet, was going to hell for all of eternity. I was supposed to believe that. And so if I was taking that seriously, I felt the need to constantly.
Because her particular
faith didn't say I'm a sinner.
Belief around Christianity and whatever, like it wasn't correct.
According to,
that's
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that rocked me because here's my grandmother, my like favorite human being. And not only that, someone I've seen move through life with so much grace and so much love, like the epitome of love, right? Yeah. My grandparents, both of them, but I was super close with my grandmother and I felt the need to really reach out to her then. Because if you're taking that seriously, if you can't sleep at night that someone you love is doomed for all of eternity, as the story goes, then yeah, then hopefully you would act on that, do something about that. So I did. And what it did is it led me to walk away from that faith tradition I was given because I reached out to my grandmother and tried to like, basically what it boiled down to was trying to prove her wrong, prove me right, and get her saved. And in trying to save my grandmother, I got saved.
Wow.
I got saved from really bad theology,
wow.
from really damaging ways of thinking about the world. And I told my grandmother this, but it was her grace in those moments, her patience with me when I would again ask her the same questions about her views on the Bible and again spout my beliefs at her, you know, trying to kind of preach at her how much patience she showed, how much love and openness and willingness to engage with me. If she hadn't done that for me, I don't know where I would be today. So it was trying to save other people that pushed me away. And so ultimately what it boils down to is the idea of people going to hell for all of eternity. Because your question was what pushed you away from the tradition that you grew up in. And as I look back in hindsight, I realize that that always rocked me. That as a kid, I had so much anxiety. I had so much fear in my life all the time. I had the hardest time as a kid. I just want to hug my little girl self. And I know that so much of it was attached to believing in hell for all of eternity.
Wow.
So that's what pushed me away.
Yeah. Me too.
Yeah.
In many ways.
Yeah.
I'm hearing you say that, and a couple things that I had written down to share. One of them was one of the things that pushed me away from conservative Christianity was the insistence on a literal hell for anyone and everyone who did not have a particular and specific belief about Jesus.
Yeah.
I was in college at the time. It's kind of funny that, you know, the adage is often, you know, you send a good Christian boy or girl off to a liberal secular college and they'll lose their faith. But me, it was going to a Baptist college. Like, that's where I started to really question
my
faith.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, that's where I started to be like, wait, what? Hold on.
I've never thought about that, but that's so true for you.
It's so true for me. Like, that was when I really started to quit. Like, and I was in it. I was deeply in it and bought into it. But some of the seeds of suspicion about some of these doctrines were really planted. And one of them was that no professor had any, what I thought, sufficient answer to the question of what about the remote tribe in the middle of the Amazon who for thousands of years has never had any concept of anyone named Jesus, let alone, you know, any sort of cross or atoning sacrifice. And there was no satisfactory answer for that. And everything that was given was almost like a way to try to escape what they were also saying, which is if you don't accept Jesus as your personal Lord and Savior, you go to hell.
Yeah.
So that was a big thing for me that, like, if that's what, that pushed me away from conservative Christianity for sure. For sure was the insistence on a literal hell. Another big one for me that came up in college, was the doctrine of predestination. Do you know this one?
Yeah.
Okay. Especially double predestination.
Oh gosh.
Which is that.
The reason why I stopped there for a second, cause I was like, whoa, people don't talk like that anymore in our world. Like, it's been so long since we've been in circles where those words even get used, but go ahead.
So, I mean, double predestination is essentially that God has foreordained from the beginning of time, those who will come to a saving knowledge of God and spend eternity in heaven, and those who will not. And they are created, like, specifically as objects of wrath to spend eternity in hell. And some get chosen, preordained before the foundation of the world to be in hell, heaven, and some in hell.
So that's part of the theology that you/we grew up with?
Yeah. So it was probably stronger in my tradition because Baptists typically aligned with Calvin, which is where this doctrine came from. You probably came from a more Arminian, I'm guessing, branch, which would have been free will.
Yeah.
And so
that was huge.
Yeah, God doesn't, you know, preordain. It's not predestined people. People get to decide for themselves. But my tradition asked of me to buy into this, and my college asked of me to buy into this idea of predestination.
You needed to sign on the dotted line that you
I don't remember a dotted line. I just remember that was the official school position. That was all the professors.
Gotcha.
And I was like standing out as a lone wolf saying, I really just can't get down with this. I cannot get down with a God who does that. So that really pushed me away.
But that was all the context of hell anyway. I mean, it all comes
all
back
comes,
to
yeah, that. It does. It comes back to hell. And then the other one I had written down was an incompatibility with science. Faith was antagonistic towards the findings within the scientific world.
Yeah.
That frustrated the crap out of me.
Yeah.
Whether it was creation versus evolution, or any other point of tension. So those were like three kind of the big things that made that when I think about my initial openness to leave a conservative expression of faith, I think those were the things that were kind of pushing me out of it. Saying,
yeah.
And I don't know if I was conscious of it, but when I look back, I can say, yeah, those things were pushing me away for sure.
Yeah. That's interesting because like you mentioned the science thing and I'm like, that's funny. Cause I had things like that, changed for me before the pushing away from the actual faith, if that makes sense. So like, for instance, I became like feminism became super important to me long before I moved from like wanting to leave that tradition altogether.
Okay.
Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So like I moved on those issues, but still felt like I could, like you were talking about being a lone wolf with the predestination thing. And I was like, oh yeah, I kind of felt like I could just stay a lone wolf and be a feminist in this tradition. Mm-hmm. So like I'd move in those areas, but still clung to like the overall faith or whatever, which I guess we both did in different areas.
Yeah.
I don't know, that just didn't push me out of the faith or away from like realizing that I wasn't down with the women can't teach and women are beneath men wasn't ultimately the thing that pushed me. Still clung to the faith, yeah, even when I moved in sense. That area. Yeah. So that's interesting.
Yeah. So I, you know, there's a lot of things that we could now say we disagree with and are, you know, more conservative expression of faith, and we could name all those, but I think it's interesting for us to name that these are the ones that kind of give us the push. Now we have all sorts of, you know, things that we don't buy into anymore. But I thought that'd be a good, interesting place to start.
Yeah. It sounds like for both of us, it's hell pushed us out of that tradition.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. All right. Next week.
All right. See you then.
We will get into what is compelling about a progressive view of Christianity.
I love it. This part of the show we call Coming Alive. This is where each episode we will recommend for you a book, a movie, a song, or just something that we've consumed that's making us come more alive.
Hey, Kate.
Hi, Colby.
What's been making you come alive lately?
Thanks for asking. Actually, lately and for the last, decade or so, the art of Scott Erickson.
Love that guy.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, I should confess he's a dear friend of ours as well. So the person of Scott Erickson also makes me come alive. But his art, I feel like everybody in the
he's
world
on
needs.
Fire right now.
He is on fire. I feel like everybody in the world needs Scott Erickson right now. And what's funny is I've always felt that about him, but it like changes. Like I think we grow together, because as I'm growing, I'm still feeling that about him, and I felt it about him years ago. So he's just, how do you describe the art? It's so hard to talk about an artist making me come alive on a podcast. Like I want to show you his art. I want to show you this guy's art. He's amazing. He's a painter. He uses a lot of different mediums, but mostly he's a painter. But he also does some spoken word type show things.
That's great.
I know, that's great, right? He's gonna love that I'm describing him this way. I'm gonna read a tiny bit of his bio here. Scott Erickson is a touring painter, performance speaker. There you go, performance speaker. That's what I was trying to say. And creative priest who mixes autobiography, mythology, and aesthetics to create art and moments that speak to our deepest experiences. Using his passion and commitment to craft, Scott has been a working artist for over a decade and has had his work appear on CNN, National Geographic, and various magazines and newspaper outlets. Most recently, Scott released Stations in the Street, an open share Stations of the Cross street art show that was hung by faith communities worldwide and utilized for Tyler Perry's Passion Live on Fox Television. So that's just a little bit about Scott, but so we've watched him do live paintings at churches that we've been a part of. So if you're a church and you want some live painting, look up Scott Erickson, because he'll do that, and it's brilliant to watch him just paint while someone's giving a sermon or while the music's going.
I can't believe we haven't had him at Sojourn yet.
I know, we need to.
Scott, if you're listening,
he's brilliant.
Come to San Diego.
But he's amazing, and I love his ability to put an image out there that a lot of times I'll I think it's interesting to watch the comments on Scott's art that he'll put on Instagram. So go to Instagram and look up Scott the Painter, or just type in Scott Erickson. I'm sure that'll pull up too. Go to ScottErickSonArt.com. I'm going to make sure I have that right. But he'll put work out there, and I feel like I'll look at the comments on Instagram and people sometimes will be like, I don't get it. And then others like resonate with it so deeply immediately. Mm-hmm. And so there's just like this really varied experience with his art. Because whatever it is, whatever he does, you do have to think. That's what I'm trying to say I love about Scott, is that whatever he puts out there, you have to think. Yep. Like, you stop and think about it. It's sometimes it's provocative, but mostly it's just, it's unique and always some sort of, not always some sort of faith aspect, but often. Recently, he's been getting pretty vocal about what's going on in our world, and he put up this image of the Statue of Liberty, and the statue is kneeling, and it says, and he put the words on there. He put some script that says, "Liberty's a bitch, and she kneels with her sons," in response to what's going on with the NFL and what our president said about those dear ones and their mothers. So he just thinks of really beautiful pieces to create in response to what's going on in our world. And I feel like I should be saying so many better things right now, but that's because you really just need to see. It's like so hard to describe on a podcast. You got to look up his art. Yeah. Check him out. He's almost saying incredible.
Would take away from it.
It does. So like, it does. We have a painting of his on our fireplace. I can see it right now. So we're recording that he painted. He actually painted that just for me out of some leftover stuff when he was doing a job at a church that we were at. But I just love him and his work and his spirit. I think I fell in love with his art long before I got to know him as a person. And then you find that the person and the art match entirely. He's incredible. Yeah, so great. Look him up. Scott the Painter on Instagram. Go to ScottErickSonArt.com. What about you? What's making you come alive?
So what's making me come alive right now is a podcast, but more specifically a series inside of a podcast.
Cool.
So the podcast is by a friend of ours, Doug Padgett, D-O-U-G-P-A-G-I-T-T, Doug Padgett. And he's had a podcast for a long time, but he's doing a series right now called Untrumped. And Untrumped is, it's an idea that he had to have a live filmed conversation. So you can tune in every Thursday and watch the conversation live, where he is talking to a Christian pastor, conservative Christian pastor, who worked in the early Trump campaign and then voted for and still supports Trump as president. Okay. So what
still supports to this day.
That's correct.
That's the point.
Yeah. Okay. So what Doug wanted to do is he wanted to have a legitimate conversation to try with someone who takes their faith seriously and is a deep person of the Christian faith. He wants to try to understand how that is true. And they also voted for and support Trump as president. And so he put out this call to all his friends on Facebook to try to find someone who'd be willing to do it with him. And he found this guy. And I listened to the first episode today, and it is fascinating, Kate, to listen to someone talk. And it's not flippant. It's not just anti-Hillary. Yeah, I hesitate saying it's thoughtful, reasoned things, because for me, like, it doesn't feel reasoned. But for him, it clearly is thoughtful, reasoned, rationale and conviction.
How does Doug hold that? Like, does he just kind of converse with it? Does he just listen, or how does that?
I think he does a really good job of trying to listen well and ask good questions, and only occasionally does. Do you hear a bit of his like reacting to it? Like
getting riled
like, yeah. Like, I can't believe that's what you think. But he holds it really well, because their goal is to not try and like snipe at each other or get one another. And the name is Untrumped, you know, the double entendre a little bit there, but because neither one wants to come in with a Trump card and just be like, ha, see, gotcha. And try and trick the other person or trap them. The goal is really to seek understanding so that, as Doug told me, like at the end of the 7 episodes, Doug wants to be able to articulate this guy's position. He will not agree with him, but he wants to understand it enough to be able to say it in a way that this guy would say, like, yep, yeah, that's what
so I when think we're sitting believe. Around our dining room table saying, I can't understand, I don't understand how a Trump supporter would explain this. He's trying to get to a point where he could
yep.
be sitting here with us and go, oh, I can explain it. And,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. So it I is like a that. Fascinating listen, and I can't wait to stay tuned in and to hear more. Because were it not for this, I think I would probably just stay where I am now, which is I don't get it. And just leave it at that. Like, right. It doesn't make any sense to me.
Right.
It's the distance between what I see Donald Trump being and what I see Jesus being, the distance could not be greater for me.
Yeah.
And so to find someone who is legitimately loves and follows Jesus as best as they can, like, for that gap either isn't there for them or it isn't a big enough deal for them. I just think I owe it to myself to understand that more. So,
yeah. So what's the podcast?
The podcast is Now We're Talking with Doug Padgett. You could just go to iTunes and search for Doug Padgett.
Okay.
Or go to Facebook, find his Facebook page where he's doing the streaming. But the series is called Untrumped, and I very much recommend.
Thanks for listening to The Kate and Colby Show. To learn more about us, hear other episodes, or send us a question or comment, visit thekateandcolbyshow.com and be sure to subscribe while you're there. The Kate and Colby Show is recorded and produced in San Diego by Matthew Blake.